All across the country today and tomorrow, people will be celebrating the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As I was born a year and a half after his death, I have often wondered, why this man? Why this man? Yes, he was an amazing speaker, brilliantly crafting sermons and rallying cries that mesmerized and drew people into the fray. Yes, he was an inspiring and charismatic leader who had the courage to lead from the front and not shy away from the danger and eventual death that stalked him. Yes, he was able to unite people across racial and religious divides in ways that celebrated the universality of divine love. Yes, he was able to face wave after wave of violence and degradation and still exude love. But I think it was something more than that. I think it had something to do with the way he made others feel, more than what he himself did. I have talked to many Unitarian Universalists and non-Unitarian Universalist clergy about the time they spent with King and how he had this ability to transform hearts, empower people who felt powerless, bring dignity and worth to everyone. His goodness made other people want to be good. His belief in justice made others want to make it come to pass. His willingness to put his life on the line for the full humanity of all compelled those who met him to do the same. That is why this man. That is why we celebrate the life and legacy of Martin Luther King, in the hopes to recapture that feeling, that faith, that desire to be good and make justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Although I knew that Dr. and Coretta Scott King had attended Unitarian churches while they were in Boston, I was unaware that they considered joining a Unitarian church. And I have been curious about what it was about Unitarianism that interested them and what it was that really turned them away. Was race the major issue, as Reverend Rosemary Bray McNacht says? But what was it about liberal religion, about Unitarianism, that, quote, would have neutralized the greatest American theologian of the 20th century? Now, it is true that in the 1950s, the American Unitarian Association, as some of you who are familiar with our faith know, there were two denominations, the American Unitarian Association and the Unitarian Church and the Universalist Church of America, that merged in 1961. But in the 1950s, the American Unitarian Association had been discouraging black men from joining the ministry for decades. It was felt by some that black people were not intellectually as curious or rigorous as white people, a feeling that did not end with the passage of the 1964 Voter Rights Act. In 1994, when I was working at the Unitarian Universalist Association, I attended a workshop with other UUA staff and clergy. One of our beloved ministers turned to her daughter, also a minister, and proclaimed that she didn't think black people were smart enough to be Unitarian Universalist ministers. When I went to seminary, only six other black women and a couple dozen black men had been ordained and fellowshipped in our faith tradition. While that number has grown exponentially since then, our 1950s Unitarian forebears were not as progressive. So, why not Unitarianism? We were still the religion of justice. We were still the faith that led the push for suffrage, for prison reform and rehabilitation, for universal health care and free education. We believed in the infinite possibility of the human soul, that everyone was worthy, of God's grace and love, that no one was born sinful, and that we need not be chained to one way of living and believing in order to be good people, in order to find salvation. These are the principles that led more Unitarian ministers than any other faith tradition to heed Martin Luther King Jr.'s call to go to Selma, Alabama. It was for these principles that the Reverend James Reeb, a Unitarian minister, and Viola Luizzo, a Unitarian lay leader, died fighting for justice. So what was it about liberalism that became a problematic for Dr. King? In his essay, Pilgrimage to Nonviolence, Dr. King describes how he discovered liberalism, like many people do, in seminary. He writes, "Like most theological students, I was engaged in the exciting job of studying various theological theories. Having been raised rather strict fundamentalist tradition, I was occasionally shocked as my intellectual journey carried me through new and sometimes complicit doctrinal lands. But despite the shock of the pilgrimage, it was always stimulating and it gave me a new appreciation for objective appraisal and critical analysis. My early theological training did the same for me. It knocked me out of my dogmatic slumber." What King came to appreciate about liberalism was its devotion to the search for truth, its insistence on an open and analytical mind, its refusal to abandon the best light of reason. Liberalism's contribution to the philosophical and historical criticism of biblical literature has been of immeasurable value and should be defended with religious and scientific passion, King said. The search for truth has always been a part of our faith. Our earliest Unitarian and Universalist ancestors scoured the Bible for the truth and believed that the common person could use reason to figure out what God wanted of us. We didn't need an intercessionary. We didn't need someone to tell us. We could read it. And the transcendentalists would say we could intuit it. We could feel it. They believed that revelation is not sealed, that insights or truth, the most sacred ideas, are not contained only in the Bible alone, and are constantly and continuously being revealed to us in the words and works of philosophers, artists, poets, musicians, nature, and the universe. This continues to be important to us today. They came to hold the idea that science should not be ignored in order to support one view or another. And they insisted that we had the right not to believe in things that have not been proven true in our lives. On Friday night, a group of us gathered in Warren Hall to watch Michael Moore's documentary, Where to Invade Next. It was a challenging view of how other countries deal with social issues such as workers' rights, education, healthcare, women's rights, drugs, poverty, and crime. Over and over again, I heard people insisting on the importance of maintaining the dignity and worth of everyone, as well as honoring the communal good. It was wonderful to see what can happen when people's humanity in all its fullness is put first. In order to contrast the way people are treated in the United States, Moore showed clips of how black people, particularly black men, are treated. Some of the clips were from the civil rights movement, some were from the beginning on the war on drugs in the 70s and 80s, some were more current of black men in prison. Over and over again, he showed the violent and inhumane ways in which the black community outline the systemic way the Black community has been criminalized, imprisoned, and re-enslaved to provide cheap or free labor. The graphic nature of those clips were disturbing, and I eventually had to leave. But it was in those pictures I saw part of the reason that Dr. King could not have been a Unitarian Universalist. King wrote, "It was the liberal doctrine of man that I began to question. The more I observed the tragedies of history and man's shameful inclination to choose the low road, the more I came to see the depths and strength of sin. I came to feel that liberalism had been all too sentimental concerning human nature and that it leaned towards false idealism. I also came to see liberalism's superficial optimism concerning human nature caused it to overlook the fact that reason is darkened by sin. Liberalism failed to see that reason by itself is little more than an instrument to justify man's defensive way of thinking. Reason devoid of purifying power of faith can never free itself from distortion and rationalization." As Unitarian Universalists, we do indeed have an optimistic view of human nature. We do not believe in original sin, that babies are born already sinful, that Adam and Eve disobeying God has created a stain on all humanity. Rather, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We believe that every person has the possibility to transform. Our Universalist forebears fought for rehabilitation, not retribution, in our criminal justice system, and were adamantly against the death penalty, believing that no person was beyond redemption. In the past, many Unitarian Universalists have rejected the ideas of sin and guilt, as other faith traditions have used both to oppress and control others. I often explain sin as those things we do that break our covenantal relationships with one another as individuals and as a community and as a country. When we are dismissive of our partner's needs, we break the covenant of our relationship to listen to one another, to pay attention to what each person needs to thrive and grow. When we vote for lower taxes because we don't want to pay for other people's children to go to school, or when we take away SNAP benefits for those who are food insecure, that, to me, is a sin, as our social covenant includes helping those who we have priced out of basic necessities. It is a sin to arm Kurdish soldiers to fight a war for us, and then abandon them when we no longer want to be involved. King has a point. Why do people choose the low road? Why do we look after ourselves and our family, but not our neighbors and our community, our country, our world? This, for me, is one of the most difficult theological challenges we as Unitarian Universalism must face. Reconciling our first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person with the obvious evil, greed, cruelty, which people have again and again proven themselves capable. How can everyone be inherently worthy if there is still so much human-created suffering in the world? Now, it's important to acknowledge that despite our belief that every person comes into the world with inherent worth and dignity, we also know that certain individuals live in our difficult world. They can be terribly wounded and twisted by harmful experiences, hateful ideas, mental illness, and emotional traumas in ways that obscure that inherent worth and dignity. In other words, I do not believe there are any innately evil people, people who are born evil. But sadly, there are people who, under the crush of circumstances, formation, indoctrination, and personality, do grow up to act in evil ways. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was witness to a black youth being charged with whistling at a white woman and then beaten and lynched by white people who were not punished in his lifetime. He watches white people with hoods and without hoods burn down homes and bomb churches, beat innocent people of all ages, shot, tortured, and dragged black people behind their cars. He watched as hoses and dogs were turned on children. He knew about evil firsthand in ways most of us will never, thankfully, experience. I agree with Dr. King that reason without faith can lead to distortion and rationalization. This is so clear for me in our current immigration policy. If we separate children from their parents at the border, then the families will not try to enter the country. I see this in the way that many people talk about poor people. The poor are poor because they are too lazy to do work. So if we take away their safety net, they will be forced to work harder and take care of themselves. I see this in the way some people say that they are not privileged and do not benefit from being white or wealthy because they are not racist or homophobic or sexist, and they don't have to address that racism, homophobia, and sexism in society. It's not their problem. Faith. Our faith reminds each of us that we are responsible not only for ourselves, not only for our families and friends, but our communities, small and large, throughout the world. It's not just about reason. It's not just about rationality. It's not just about science. We are connected. What affects one of us affects all of us. We do need each other. Our liberation, the survival of our species, of our earth, depends on the global recognition of our interconnection. Our faith challenges us to see the divine in every person, to honor our covenants with one another and the earth, and to bring about justice and equity in whatever ways we can. Perhaps it is a wasted exercise thinking about whether or not the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King could have been a Unitarian Universalist. Perhaps what is most important is to follow his example of honoring that worth and dignity he saw in all, of empowering those who feel powerless, of shining goodness and love where meanness and hate reign, of tearing down walls that divide us based on religion and race, sexual orientation and gender, economic status and age, of putting our life on the line for the lives of our larger human family. Perhaps what we need to take from Dr. King's criticism of liberalism is the courage to name evil when we see it and work against it. The humanity to claim our sins and work to repair our broken covenants, and the faith in humanity that if we continue to feel the good in one another, that goodness will grow stronger and overcome hate. Maybe that's the point of today.